I'm Mike and Scott, and this is The Pulse, stories at the heart of health, science, and innovation. You can find our podcast on iTunes. The language of pain has its limitations. We use words like stabbing, nagging, or burning to describe how we hurt. Doctors and nurses usually ask us to put a number on it. On a scale from 0 to 10, how bad is your pain? And then you start thinking, well, what makes it a number 10 pain? For me, a 10 would probably be a toothache I had a few years ago or the time I slammed my finger into the car door. That was the worst. But when you're seeking treatment for pain, choosing the right number is difficult because if you say 7, maybe you're exaggerating. But if you say 3, perhaps the doctor thinks, well, what are you doing here then? A 3 is not that bad. There is concern that this imperfect tool, assigning a simple number to a really complex problem, has contributed to the nation's prescription drug epidemic, and that it's not leading to good treatment. Pulse reporter Alana Gordon has been digging into where this numerical scale came from and why there's push for a change.
Katie Hicks doesn't remember pain being discussed much when she was a med student. This was in the late 90s in California.
Well, I don't think that when I did medical school, I don't think that was a part of the conversation really at all.
Then during the first year or two of residency in internal medicine at a county hospital, she noticed a change. Along with checking things like blood pressure and temperature, nurses and doctors started asking patients about the intensity of their pain.
What happened was it showed up on the paperwork first and really in the nursing documentation, and then it became a part of the conversation. It was an additional vital sign, basically.
Hicks doesn't recall any special rollout. It just kind of crept into everything. And so she found herself routinely asking about patients' pain on a scale of 0 to 10 over the course of a patient's stay.
I would be asking you, what was your pain when you came into the hospital and what is your pain now? And especially if somebody was given some type of medication, Tylenol or Motrin or morphine, you would say, what was your pain before you had the medication? What was your pain after you had the medication?
This wasn't just a California thing. Around that time, the use of the pain scale was spreading like wildfire across the country. That's because the early 2000s marked a turning point in the culture of pain in America. Myra Christopher is with the Center for Practical Bioethics in Kansas City. She recalls the specifics of this shift very well. She was part of the movement that led to it.
And this really surprises people sometimes, but in 2000, Congress, in fact, declared the next decade the decade for pain, the decade for improving pain.
President Bill Clinton signed H.R. 3244 into law, making pain control and research a priority over the next 10 years. Christopher says several factors pushed the needle to this point. There had been growing recognition that pain was being vastly undertreated and not taken seriously. The attitude had long been, just suck it up, deal with it, even after surgery. Doctors were extremely cautious of opioids. But this was also a time when a huge portion of the population was getting older and dealing with chronic pain. In the wake of Vietnam and the Gulf War, the military increased its focus on veterans' pain. Professional societies took up the issue, as did drug manufacturers. The Joint Commission, the main hospital accreditation agency, stepped in.
The Joint Commission, in fact, decided that they should make a quality measure about the assessment of pain. And the notion was that if pain was assessed more often, then it would be treated better.
The commission began requiring that hospitals regularly assess pain as a measure of quality. The numerical scale wasn't anything new. But Christopher says it was around this time that the 0 to 10 approach became more institutionalized. Because think about it, numbers are a universal language. Describing pain, not so much.
So we were trying to figure out a way to move from a physician or an advanced practice nurse saying, how's your pain? And someone saying, oh my God, it's killing me. You can't imagine. I feel like someone's driving nails into my joints or whatever, to something that was more consistent and congruent with the clinical model.
So those driving nails in your joint would turn into something like an 8. But 0 to 10 wasn't initially designed for addressing patients' pain. It was meant to be a tool to study it.
OK, Okay. Mood scales, lower extremity scale, functional scales.
Dr. John Farrer is a pain specialist and biostatistics guy at the University of Pennsylvania. He helps design pain assessments used to study new treatments, and he has spent decades analyzing measurements. To show for it, he opens up this huge drawer next to his desk.
These are all scales.
Wait, you have just like two columns of just manila folders. They're all different pain scales?
Yes.
That's crazy.
Farrer's point is there's a lot to defining and measuring pain. And researchers have come up with all sorts of approaches. Some have involved sensory comparisons, or applying some sort of heating pad or a sharp piece of plastic to your skin. As for the scales, there are many. Some are verbal, some use faces. Yes, emoticons were a hit in healthcare way before you could text them on your phone. Farrer says it was the onset of clinical trials right after the Second World War that led to the development and use of pain scales, and more specifically, numerical scales. Researchers wanted a standardized way to measure whether patients were benefiting from a treatment or not. One way to detect that would be to measure whether patients reported changes in their pain score.
From a clinical trial perspective, if the 7 goes down to a 4 and the 5 goes down to a 3, I know both of them got better.
For his own research and care of cancer patients, Farrer keeps what's called the Brief Pain Inventory Scale close by.
It contains 4 questions about pain.
It's still brief, but it is a more extensive questionnaire that asks about pain experiences over time, with patients answering on a scale of 0 to 10.
How much does pain interfere with your life?
But even surrounded by all these scales, Farrer says a number in and of itself can't be taken as an objective measure. Because in all of these assessments, pain is still self-reported. Your 8 might be different from my 8. And a lot of factors can influence how a person experiences short and long-term pain.
So part of the problem with our pain scales is that no matter how good they would be, they're not adequate to make our own complete assessment about somebody's pain.
A few hundred yards away from Farrer's office, the University of Pennsylvania's emergency room confronts these challenges daily. I asked Dr. Jean-Marie Perrone and Megan Scott, a triage nurse, to show me how pain fits into their intake process.
I can open the ZZZ chart.
Yeah, maybe that would be helpful.
Pain intensity on a scale of 0 to 10 has become a central part of the electronic medical record. Up on their computer screen, I see a special slot where they document the number that a patient reports. There's a space for comments, too. Both Scott and Perrone say lots of people come in here with a 15 out of 10.
We've all seen the greater than 10 on our 1 to 10 scale.
Can you even write that in?
No, that's not an option. You just try to kind of explain it a little bit better and refocus.
Dr. Perrone can't imagine a world without the numeric pain scale. But she and others worry that its widespread promotion has had an unintended outcome. Because measuring pain on a numeric scale has brought with it an expectation to treat that pain, to lower that number.
I think the leap we've made is that we need to get that pain down to 0 or 5, or, you know, in various times we've never really had good guidance on how to decrease the pain and what our endpoints were.
Treating pain is important, but Perrone says doctors she knows have felt pressured to use what limited tools they've had. Opioids have been a big one. Around the launch of that decade of pain about 16 years ago, government agencies issued more proactive opioid treatment guidelines. Meanwhile, pain became part of patient satisfaction measures and reimbursements. The American Medical Association has contended that new formulations, boosted by manufacturers, convinced the world that these drugs were safer and less addictive for treating long-term pain, beyond its more studied use in cancer patients. Dr. Chester Buckenmeyer directs the Defense Department's Center for Integrative Pain Management. He says everyone now realizes that pendulum swung too far.
We've been so focused on intensity to the exclusion of these other issues that we're missing the point with the patient and ourselves, and that pain therapy isn't necessarily about getting your pain intensity to zero.
It's something he calls chasing zero, and the expectation to eliminate pain completely. But there's one problem with this, because enough opioids can do that.
I'm an anesthesiologist. There's nobody on the planet that I can't get their pain to zero. but they're not going to be functional.
Today, in a nation grappling with addiction, rising overdose deaths, and the search for better ways to understand and manage chronic pain, there's been a lot of finger-pointing and backpedaling. Congress has launched investigations. Federal health agencies are revisiting treatment guidelines. They're retooling pain as a quality metric in hospitals and reevaluating the role of pain in patient satisfaction scores. Even the military is reassessing how it assesses pain, giving that 0 to 10 scale a bit of a makeover.
How are we feeling today?
A little uncomfortable.
Okay, well, we'll do our best to get you feeling a little bit better.
This is a clip from a new educational video from the Department of Defense and Veteran Affairs about an augmented pain scale they're rolling out.
It'll allow both of us to better understand how pain is affecting your life.
It still uses 0 to 10, but includes colors, faces, and some qualifying language. There's also questions about mood, stress, sleep, and activity. Buckenmeyer was part of a task force that developed this. He says the scale is just one tool. It won't solve the bigger problem. But he hopes that changing the way pain is assessed can begin to change the attitudes and approaches to treating it. That involves a lot more than trying to completely get rid of pain.
And I think we understand now better that pain is a what we call a biopsychosocial experience, meaning it's got physical, emotional, psychological components beyond just that intensity measure.
It all means that doctors, nurses, and patients are navigating a tricky area, trying to find better ways to avoid undertreating, overtreating, and mistreating pain. And at the very least, simply reducing pain down to a single number. For The Pulse, I'm Alana Gordon.
Did you like this story? Subscribe to our podcast. It's on iTunes.